This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go immediately to the headlines from Brazil following the very critical election in these last hours, the second most populous state in the New World, Brazil. The headline from Reuters in these hours: Brazil's Bolsonaro does not concede to Lula da Silva, the winner of the election, but President Bolsonaro authorizes transition. This is significant in that at the same time we have a headline from the Supreme Court saying the authorization of the transition is a concession. So I welcome the professor to comment on what we've learned from the vote. It was a heavily contested election with lots of drama, a suggestion of violence, but never a mass violence. However, now there have been comments afterwards about Bolsonaro not conceding. This headline would seem to say that was so much speculation. Professor, a very good day to you. What have we learned from the vote in Brazil? Looking at the map, generally from 20,000 miles off the planet, it looks like the North voted heavily for the challenger, Lula da Silva, the former president, and the South of Brazil voted heavily for the incumbent, Mr. Bolsonaro. What inside those large state votes did we learn or is surprising? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. First of all, I think it's notable what did not happen. So there was not a national disruption. There was not a military coup. There was not a breakdown in democracy. Indeed, the electoral mechanisms across Brazil functioned very well. It was remarkable. My colleagues and I actually watched literally minute by minute as the results came in. The results were definitive within hours of the poll closing. So I think lesson number one is democracy has worked in Brazil. Lesson number two is that the military and other major institutions have adhered to their constitutional responsibilities. And lesson number three is that while Jair Bolsonaro continues to reflect perhaps his quirky leadership character by not actually saying the word concede, he did authorize, as you point out, the transition, and that's going forward. And while you certainly have some difficulties around the country, trucker strikes, those have already diminished. They're down from an estimated 321 roadblocks on the first day to about half of that now. Only about 17 of the 26 states do you still have roadblocks. And so, Brazil is pressing forward, and on January 1st, you will have a new Lula government. With respect to the electoral map, certainly the poorer states of the Northeast have traditionally been sympathetic to Lula, certainly bolstered by things like his Bolsa Família cash transfer program during his period in office. The more agriculturally oriented, prosperous South, especially with values of self-reliance, et cetera, have gone to a certain degree to Bolsonaro. But it's also notable that major portions, marginalized populations in major cities such as Sao Paulo, such as Rio de Janeiro, have been very sympathetic to Lula. So the electoral map wasn't that surprising. The closeness of the race, I think, surprised a number, with Lula only winning by 2 percentage points when in some polls he had been up by 14 percentage points going into the role, which goes to show, as we had expected, that there is an underreporting of people who are sympathetic to Bolsonaro in the polls and a certain amount of mobilization of Bolsonaro's base at the very end. But as we talked about previously on the show, at the end, it wasn't enough to prevent Lula from winning. And now we move towards a Lula presidency, which will actually likely be relatively centrist and politically politically in other terms, in terms of fiscal policy, although it will Lula will deal with a lot of difficulties in pushing his agenda through the Congress with a large block of Liberal Party and other Bolsonaro sympathetic parties. He will also deal with limited resources compared to what he had in this 2003 to 2010 period in office, and a much more polarized population than the last time he was in office. And I think we can also expect that there will be dramatic implications for Brazil's foreign policy, if not necessarily its domestic policy, other than a move towards some increase in government programs, maybe some more environmental protectionism, and a reversal on certain issues like gun control and some privatization.
We have this from Brasilia, Reuters again. Brazilian President-elect Lula da Silva will negotiate in the coming weeks an increase in the 2023 government spending that could exceed 200 billion reais, $39 billion, according to his former finance minister. In an interview with Reuters, the former finance minister said the first task of the new government taking over will be revisiting 2023. Why? Because what they need is to remove a spending cap in order to make more, quote, more generous welfare programs, for the government to also expand, quote, emergency public investment in infrastructure and housing. So what we have is Lula da Silva reminding everybody what it was that his presidency provided during the boom years, right? Evan, you've taught me that Lula da Silva's two terms were during a time of great prosperity flowing in because of the natural resources of Brazil. And he was able to build a budget that was generous. And now he's going to rebuild the budget to be generous. Does the economy support this today as it did 15 years ago?
It doesn't, John. This is the challenge. Lula trying to do the same approach with government social programs, cash transfer, government bureaucracies to address problems. But the problems have gotten bigger, especially on the heels of COVID-19 and the inflationary effects of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. And the budget to do so have gotten smaller. So that's what pushes Lula to be interested in at least trying to temporarily get the spending cap out of the way. But over the long term, it's going to be a serious struggle to do some of the things he wants to do, both because of the legislative pushback and because, frankly, the money just isn't there that was there before.
And looking at the map again, Brazil is a very rich country. I mean, the Amazon is the least of it. Well, not the least, but certainly not the only part. It's rich in all commodities. Its foodstuffs are highly desired by the world. There is the building blocks of not only a revival, but a country leaping ahead in the 21st century. So the puzzle is the government intervening, or at least being generous towards people, and the government dominating institutional decisions. Is that what we can expect from Lula da Silva? The government picking winners is a simple way of saying it.
John, I remember when I was in the private sector in the early 2000s, when we looked at Brazil, we used to talk about the Brazil cost. In other words, the enormous extra expense from government regulation and taxes and just doing business there. And so the real question is, I think we'll probably return to that to some degree. Bolsonaro, to his credit, had made some progress in moving towards privatization in electricity and in petroleum and in other sectors. We'll probably walk back some of that. To a certain degree. As you pointed out, there is enormous wealth, but the wealth comes from on the one hand, commodities. And so, Brazil's ability to get export earnings from its exports of agricultural goods, pork and meat and other things, depends very much on the China market. Its ability to export, its iron, its petroleum, which is actually relatively expensive with the subsalt petroleum. And so there are questions about commodity prices and questions about taking advantage of those commodities. On the other hand, you have sectors such as Brazil's high tech sector, its fintech sector, and others. Brazil is a remarkably sophisticated, well-developed, and diverse economy. But the problem is that those types of tech sectors really depend on incentives and innovation and things like that that risk being crushed or trampled upon by renewed government regulation. And so Brazil is a wealthy country, but there's an old saying that Brazil is the country of tomorrow and always will be. And so it remains to be seen whether the reimposition of likely government constraints will undercut Brazil's ability to push forward with, at the very least, some of the types of manufacturing in high tech that it really needs to get beyond its commodity dependence as it moves forward in these very difficult times.
I want to reiterate something you've already said, Professor, to ask if there's an explanation for it. There were headlines after headlines. I read many stories about how Mr. Bolsonaro would in some fashion wreck the whole process by using the military or some paramilitary organization. It was never clear. In order to disrupt the vote, there would be mass violence that we could look at civil conflict. It was a lot of speculation, and it seemed unfounded now. Has that always been the case in Brazil? Each time we come to an election, there are all these fictional representations of the end of the world and then nothing.
John, it really has been this particular election. And as we have discussed in this show numerous times, I think to a certain degree, not unlike what has happened in the United States with the discourse over January 6th. In Brazil, you had a parallel discourse that Bolsonaro was a threat to democracy. The military would step in, making references to the fact that the military had, governed Brazil from 20 years. But in the end, it was overblown. As we talked about on the show, the Brazilian military is very professional, very respectful of democracy, very adherent to the Constitution. Indeed, Brazil's former military vice president was the first person to jump in and congratulate his counterpart. There was never any question of military involvement. Judicially, there was never any question of shenanigans. And indeed, actually, Alexandre de Moraes, who is no friend of Lula, was no friend of Bolsonaro, was very proactive in making sure that everything ran on time. So at the end of the day, this was, I think, a bit of a false narrative, part of the polarization in Brazil. And again, I think the results, although may not do credit on Bolsonaro's style as a poor loser, but I think certainly emphasizes the triumph and the resilience of Brazilian democracy.
Professor Avenelles, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. There is a new election always in the new world, and the next one is Argentina. We're headed there next because President Alberto Fernandez is very keen to congratulate Lula da Silva. So what is the relationship between these two critical states in the new world come the new calendar year? I'm John Bauer.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.